Hello, denim heads, and welcome to your first Loose Thread episode with the Sons of Selvage, a podcast where a group of friends get together to talk about denim and related interests. This episode, we'll be talking for an hour about rock music. Of course, please subscribe to us wherever you enjoy our content, YouTube, Spotify, Apple, Google, or Stitcher. Check us out on Instagram and give us a shout if you've got any questions or you want to join our Discord server. So I guess maybe to say hello, Andy, do you want to intro yourself?
Hi, yeah, I'm Andy.
Cool. I'm David, and I'm wearing a Nine Lives shirt, a.k.a. Clothing that looks really cool but doesn't fit that well. And I think there's somebody else in the call, too.
Yeah. That would be me. Hi, Rick. Yeah. Hello.
Yeah. Jesse, you've got an indigo. Indigo Farrah flannel.
Yeah, that's it. You do have one. You have one too. That's why you know. Okay.
A different model, but I know that shirt is really cool.
Oh, alright.
Awesome.
I thought you had the same one then.
Yeah, I bought that one on Market. It didn't quite fit me. It was a bit too short lengthwise. Gotcha. So I sent it back, and I've got a different model. That's also an indigo dyed flannel. Less cool fabric. The fabric you've got is way cooler. That's actually selvage, awesome, amazing indigo flannel.
So all three of us have indigo dyed indigo ferret flannels.
So we go get you run away, change, and come back.
Don't want to wake up my wife and my child.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, cool. So let's jump right into the loose thread topic for today. Rock music. No actual agenda here, just sort of, I know we all like different forms of rock, I guess I'll call it. What have you guys been listening to recently?
I'll start. I've been listening to on repeat, because it's only 6 tracks and 7 minutes 55 in total, the EP Unpleasant Living by the Baltimore hardcore band, End It.
Wait, 1 minute per song? Basically,
yeah. Shortest song is 40 seconds. Longest song is 2 minutes 40. They are fucking phenomenal.
That would drive me mad. I hate when you really
so good.
I hate when you get a really good band and you love a track and it's it happens to be one of those interlude tracks that's super short.
But these aren't interludes. They're this is a 6-track EP, and they're just fast. They are they kind of have some of the kind of newer hardcore sensibilities. There's a bit of crunch to them, but then they also have that old school 80s hardcore vibe about them. And there's an amazing video up on YouTube by the guy Hate56, who goes and films loads of hardcore bands at festivals and stuff. And their set is like 20 minutes long, and it is one of the most amazing things I've ever seen.
Do you pay less money to see them because of the duration?
Well, it's part of a festival, isn't it? Hardcore gigs are only a fiver a ticket anyway.
Oh, right. There's not I admit I know next to nothing about hardcore. Is there not high-end kind of big billing hardcore bands?
Yeah,
Black Flag or something. I don't know. They charge big money.
Yeah, like Black Flag, Converge. Converge always pay a bit. They're kind of maybe more metalcore. Some bands do it for a living. Most bands, they're guys who've got other jobs, bands The Armed, who are becoming big news because they're kind of bringing in hardcore and grindcore into a pop aesthetic. The lead singer's does marketing for Levi's and stuff as his main job, and various other firms. They all have other jobs. Hardcore isn't really something that a lot of people can live off. It's very much something people do for the love of it.
Are other rock genres that are adjacent to hardcore different in that regard?
I'd say metal. Certain parts of metal, you can definitely have a very good living. or you can at least live off your stuff. Some kind of, I don't know, like, is it even still a thing, like pop punk? People like that, and metalcore, you know, those kind of ones, they're the ones that will often get the arenas and stuff. Hardcore bands don't. Hardcore bands do, you know, small gigs, yeah. They might headline a small festival. Like Converge are the kind of band that would headline maybe a smaller stage at a big festival.
And mind you, when Andy mentions that they can make a living out of it, it's mainly in the American circuit.
Yeah.
Because in Europe, it's really tough.
Yeah.
What makes it different over here?
Good question, buddy.
Because in theory, you've got a better social support network in Europe, right?
Well, so with the punk and hardcore scene, it's all mainly DIY anyway. And, you know, all the contacts are shared around and stuff like that. But I wouldn't say you're making a living out of it. Because mostly, like, bands get their incomes from the merch they sell.
Yeah.
You know, it's not. I wouldn't advise it.
Like bands like Converge can maybe get away with charging $5,000 per gig, but that's split, you know, split between four guys, probably some of their crew as well.
I would hope, and that's because they've been going for more than that.
Yeah. But that's a band that's been going for, like, you know, 25, exactly. 30 years. Yeah. They've got a huge following. They guaranteed to sell out. The promoters and the venues will always make their money back.
So is hardcore basically just punk with, like, more metal type inspiration?
To an extent, it's more pissed off. It started off as more pissed off punk, and then it's gradually kind of got more metallic influences as we've gone along.
Yeah. But if you look back at bands like Bad Brains, the whole DC thing, it was different from what you hear nowadays, for sure.
Yeah, some of the bands now
are
still doing that kind of sound. So I will post the End It video on our WhatsApp. They're a phenomenal band.
And these are the guys you mentioned with the 7-minute.
Yeah. I will play. This is their set from. I'll post it in here, and I recommend everyone to have a look at it if you're vaguely interested into kind of punk and kind of metal or anything like that. Go check out their set off 856 from July. It's 20 minutes. It starts off with the lead singer singing Sitting on a Dock of the Bay. For like, he does the whole thing a cappella really, really well, and then it just goes like that straight into this really blistering hardcore.
In 1 minute, or does he do like a full, like, 5-minute
song? I think he sings it for like 2 minutes. There's a couple of verses, and then it just clicks, and then the rest of the band kick in. It's so good.
Oh, man. Sorry, I just had this vision of a dude on stage doing the whistle.
Maybe with like a really kind of like high-pitched squeal on the guitar. Yeah. I don't think I've ever listened to like a hardcore performance live. Maybe some stuff kind of adjacent to it. Mm-hmm. Like when I was at Oblivion Access Fest over the summer in Austin, I heard a band called MS Paint, like Microsoft Paint.
I've heard of them. Yeah.
And it's kind of Future Islands doing really shouty punk music. Is how I'd maybe describe it. So kind of like some synth and kind of electronic influences, but basically the lead singer is just very angry and shouting the whole time. Mm-hmm. I wonder if maybe they're considered hardcore adjacent.
I think I've heard things on the hardcore subreddit, because of course there's a subreddit for hardcore. I think they've been mentioned a few times.
Okay.
How about you, David?
I guess the main thing I've been into maybe almost this whole year is like, so obviously I've always loved shoegaze, and like, you know, I didn't grow up on it because, you know, when My Bloody Valentine and all that stuff was happening over here, you know, Slow Dive, Ride, all those bands, that was basically like when grunge was happening in the States. And so like I grew up, you know, on Nirvana and particularly Alice in Chains, I really, really like. Stone Temple Pilots, I was a big fan of. So a lot of the kind of like mainstream grunge bands. So I didn't really learn about shoegaze really until I moved over here to the UK. And I think I actually kind of found out about shoegaze weirdly through like ambient drone type stuff, like Tim Hecker, Grouper, Belong, some of these bands that they were kind of like, oh yeah, these guys are kind of like taking shoegaze and bringing it to the electronic space. I'm like, ooh, what's the stuff that they were originally listening to? And I kind of like eventually discovered a lot of these classic bands. Actually, I should say that happened in Paris when I lived in France, because I actually saw My Bloody Valentine in Paris at Le Bataclan, where the terrorist accident incident happened.
I won't call that an accident.
Yeah, sorry. wrong phrase. But yeah, so I saw MBV play there. It was fucking awesome. And like, I wore good earplugs. I was warned. Since I've been really big into shoegaze, but I kind of like seeing, I guess, this kind of new direction, which maybe you could call it heavy gaze, you could call it dark gaze, you could call it, the most common term I hear is sludge gaze, because it's kind of mixing influences of like sludge metal or grunge and shoegaze sounds. So I've been listening a lot recently, particularly to a band called Another Heaven. They're based out of, I think, Minneapolis, and all the guys in the band have either been previously in metal groups or like punk groups. And so they're kind of doing shoegaze inspired music, but with like a lot more kind of sludginess to it and some kind of more shouty, metally, punky inspired vocals, but still kind of like wall of sound, real heavy distortion. And the latest record by Another Heaven, which came out, I think, just like last week or something, is absolutely fantastic. And their last record, it's like Another Heaven album 4, blah, album 3, blah. They've got kind of like a number up front and then the album name, had been some of my top records both this year and last year. So the number one, the newest one's album 4, Heaven Sent. The one last year was album 3, The Sorrowful Cries of Birds with Singed Feathers. Actually, it's a couple years old now. But anyways, really love those guys and have been listening a lot to them. And then also some kind of adjacent bands that are less new. Stuff like Animal Ghosts, which is kind of like a one-man shoegaze project from a dude in the Pacific Northwest, I think. And then also... a band I actually also discovered at Oblivion Access Fest, which is really cool, called Cold God, G-A-W-D. They're a band from L.A., sort of SoCal, doing kind of sludge-gazy stuff. And interestingly, the lead singer is like, he's like an African-American dude with like big dreadlocks and stuff, and brings kind of like, I don't know, a different slant to like shoegaze vocals than kind of your average angsty white guy. I mean, I don't want to stereotype, but it's like he's got kind of his own cool style that he brings to it. So yeah, I guess it's a lot of stuff kind of in that ballpark.
It sounds a bit post-metal-y to an extent, a bit like post-metal.
Yeah, I mean,
bands like Cult of Luna and Isis, the band, and like Red Sparrows and stuff like that, though that may be more of a post-rocky element.
The closest thing I can think to compare it to is some of the like instrumental stuff from Big Brave.
Okay.
Because, you know, they kind of do those like really sort of wall of sound, fuzz, distortion, you know, feedback, reverb, all that kind of stuff.
That almost sounds a bit like Sun as well.
Yeah.
Every time
I've seen them, I've come back deaf.
Yeah, you've got a bit of that, the kind of Sun or Earth sort of influence, you know, bringing that kind of sludge. It's like basically bringing like sludgy metal stuff into shoegaze.
Have you heard Nadia and The Angelic Process?
No, I haven't. So they were two different bands?
So The Angelic Process and Nadia were bands like, they were around I remember when I was at uni, so it's 20 years ago, everyone, because I'm old and dying. The Angelic Process, I think they released like two records. I've got one of them. Coma, is that the Angelic Process?
2021 album?
2021? Unless it's a reissue. I think that's the one I bought when I was at uni.
They're all red and black covers, basically.
They released. These are like Coma Wearing 2003. Yeah, I think that's the one I have. And then they also did Weighing Souls with Sand. There's them, and then Nadia, which is NADJA, I believe.
Cleverly, Spotify put them as the top recommended. They have like the fans also like. It was the first fans also like on the Angelic Process page.
Yeah, and oh, cool. Nadia were another duo that do this kind of stuff. They've been going. They've been going for about the same amount of time. Did my mate's band Atavis do a split with them?
Interestingly, also in the fans also like is Planning for Burial, who I saw this summer at Oblivion Access as well.
Okay.
It's basically like one dude kind of doing just like really awesome, gloomy. Yeah, here you go. Gloomy experimental metal borrows from shoegaze, goth, and alt rock, as well as doom, drone, and black metal.
Perfect.
Yeah.
And he's like, and follow.
Go sit in a graveyard in corpse paint and drink some red wine.
Sounds like an average weekend in Cambridge.
It's just art. You won't understand.
How about you, Ricky? What have you been listening to?
Pretty much two releases that were this month, last month, September, from this really, really cool band from Atlanta called 68. So I got the chance to catch them live here in London. They were touring the country. For a duo.
Oh, shit. That's Josh Scoggin from... The Chariot, and he was the first vocalist for I should know. They did Memphis Maybe Laid for Waste. Oh, I don't just hate it when a band drops out your name, drops out your, like, you know them so well and then you forget what they're called. There'll be a lot of this, sorry, listeners, of me just saying fuck because I can't remember band's name. Norma Jean, who did the first record. He was the first vocalist on Norma Jean. He was the one, Bless the Martyr and Kiss the Child, which is a phenomenal record.
Dude, I just have to say that I haven't seen a band rock any place this hard like these two motherfuckers. It's like, these guys are absolutely nuts. Like, I've seen heavy stuff. Mm-hmm. I've seen really cool rock and roll. These guys just absolutely nail it. And you just go on YouTube, watch any of their videos, and now for you to have a comparison of what it is live, try to tenfold that, because live you get that punch straight in the face, man. It's really, really, really good. They're awesome. And so their latest album just came out, and yeah, it's a bit more polished, I would say. Maybe not polished, but more more up to date with current productions, but it's really cool. Like, I was trying to pretty much convince my friends. I was saying, like, jokingly, obviously, but I was saying, like, it's everything we wanted the White Stripes to be. But obviously the White Stripes are awesome in their own right. They're really, really, really good. I can't explain much more than this because I'm not a big label guy and stuff. But look at what Wikipedia just says: noise rock.
Mm-hmm. Which will get both me and David very excited.
Yeah, I love some noise.
They have like, there's noise, but it's riff oriented rock, you know.
That is a lot of noise right there, isn't it? So like bands like Ken Mode and Unsane, and you know, even like some of the heavier elements of like Oxbow, it's rock. Really scuzzy rock.
Sure. And the thing with them is that there's like loads of effects going on.
Mm-hmm.
And everything, like, don't think that anything is, you know, like, there's no backing tracks or anything like that. Everything is, like, done live. And it's really something to look forward to. If they're coming by, you know, any town near you guys, just, obviously for the listeners, just go watch them. They're worth every single penny. They're really, really good. They're going to tour with Thrice, funny enough.
Oh, they're still going.
Oh, yeah, apparently. So they're touring with Thrice and another band that is not, let me double check, that's also well known. They're going to be opening for both, I can't remember now off the top of my head, but let me double check that. Surely it's on Instagram.
Yeah, and just to mention here, I found them finally on Spotify. It's like apostrophe 68, like the abbreviation for the year 1968.
Mm-hmm.
They say a little rock, a little blues, a little hardcore.
Yes, yes. It has a little bit. I would say it has a lot of all three of those.
Oh, I've just seen the advert here on Brooklyn Vegan. It's, Thrice are doing the 20th anniversary of The Artist and the Ambulance.
Here's a bit of random stuff.
Mm-hmm.
If anyone ever bought any leather goods or followed the brand Teranishi Studio, like I've got one of their backpacks from back when, and like an indigo dyed kind of minimalist wallet. That was Tepe Teranishi, who I think is one of the maybe like guitarist for Thrice.
I remember you mentioning something about that.
Yeah, and he like started the leather brand based upon kind of like basically he was traveling. It was like designing his own bags and leather goods and wallets, whatever, to kind of think about like how to optimize his time on the road. And then when Thrice called it quits, like he basically took that on as his full-time job, but eventually put it on the back burner to like go back into playing music again. He has some really fucking cool designs too, like really clever designs.
Sorry guys, can't find the other band they were supposed to open for. Maybe I'm confusing with someone else, but yeah, Thrice is for sure. And the other thing I've been listening to a lot lately is Dave Eugene Edwards' solo album. So for anyone who doesn't know who David is, he's the singer mastermind behind band Woven Hand, who, like, if you don't know them, also just jump on that bandwagon because they're amazing. Woven Hand is really, really good. Unfortunately, their drummer passed away maybe last month, so that was a bummer. So David Eugene Edwards, who's the singer for Woven Hand, and also another project of his called 16 Horsepower. Also cool, but now he's released a solo album, which is called, sorry guys, I have to double check this because it always has a funny name. It's called Hyacinth.
It's a kind of flower.
Hyacinth, sorry. What's that, David?
Hyacinth, it's a kind of flower.
Oh, okay. I totally butchered that. It's like, yes. I just said that way because I know he's like he used to be, at least, I'm pretty sure he still is, very deeply religious guy. And a lot of Woven Hand's lyrics are like, you know, they have a lot, all based like on Bible stuff and whatnot. But like, I advise anyone to listen to his music. It's just amazing. He's coming through London. He's doing the European tour at the moment, but he's coming through London. So definitely going to watch him at the end of this month on the 23rd. Awesome.
In Portuguese, a hyacinth is called a jacinto.
Yeah. No. Yeah. I wouldn't have gotten there. Okay. I know what it is.
Google.
But, yeah.
What kind of stuff is it? Is it kind of like bluesy rock? Is it kind of goth rock? I'm trying to kind of gauge from the photos.
Well, with Woven Hand is, oh man, it's really hard to pinpoint. It's definitely on a bit more on the bluesy side, but the way he sings is the captivating thing. But in my opinion, it's because he has this almost preacher like voice. And I don't know, man. It's really captivating. It's different. It's different. He's not like your ordinary singer. He has a very, like, I would say baritone, almost like bass, like voice. Sounds really good. His last album has been on repeat lately. He's gone up a bit more acoustic now and more ambient, I would say, with this release. But yeah, it's really good, really good.
Yeah, sounds really cool. I like more and more just hearing people do cool shit with a guitar.
Mm-hmm.
Like I randomly discovered just yesterday, actually, a guy named Bill Orchid, who used to be a part of the band Hairy Pussy back in the whenever.
How could I not know of him?
That famous band. I'm sure I saw them on Top of the Pops when I was a kid.
Yeah, well, I assume they must be famous, but it was him and a guy named Chris Corsano, who's a drummer, and the two of them were basically doing like free jazz improvisation with drums and guitar. Or like experimental jazz, avant-garde jazz, whatever you want to call it. But that was kind of cool to hear, just kind of randomly. The album's called Made Out of Sound. Chris Corsano, Bill Orchid is just kind of like, just sort of jamming out, doing really cool licks on a guitar and like really cool kind of syncopated rhythms and stuff with the drums. And I'm like, whoa, this is crazy. I've never heard anything like this before, but like I'm digging it.
Okay, I'm gonna have to. You've got me thinking now. Because the way you describe that makes me now think of Marnie Stern, who is just about to release a new album. She is an amazing guitar player, and she does this like crazy abrasive but kind of poppy rock. I am now going to try and find it and post it so you can all listen to it and go, I hate it.
Latest single, Plain Speak.
Yeah, that's the new stuff. I'll try and for not because she's only released like two tracks off the album, and I'm not quite sure about them yet. But the stuff off the early stuff, that makes me sound like such a tit, doesn't it? But the stuff that I found, she's one of those things. I saw her at Supersonic in Birmingham back in like 2009.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know who she was. I just remember seeing this band. There was this front woman, and she was very kind of doing this kind of twiddly guitar stuff that's kind of really cool. And that's about it. And then she appears out of nowhere on like the Saints Row 2 soundtrack on the computer game. She was on one of the radio stations on there, and then I started digging into her stuff. So I'm going to post it. See if she's got Bandcamp or something, and I'll pop it on. She's great, and she's just come back. Really good.
I have to say that's probably like my biggest regret of my 10 years in this country is that I never knew about Supersonic until this year. Like, had I known that festival existed, man, I would have gone up to Birmingham like every year.
So good. I saw. Was it the first time I went? The headliners were Sun, High on Fire. Was it Sun? No, Sun was the second time. But the first time it was High on Fire and Isis. The second time it was Sun and Thor's Hammer, which is like a predecessor of Sun. And I even saw one of my mates, Toby, get thrown into a metal fence by the guys from Sun because he's mates with them. Just like randomly. There's something involving a chicken nugget as well. I can't remember that. It was just like, it's mad. Both times I went were amazing. And what annoyed me the most was then the time I couldn't go. Every time I haven't been able to go, usually it's a band like Oxbow is playing or Mel Banana that I've been dying to see and I can't.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because if I understand correctly, it's kind of taken the same sort of trajectory that like Oblivion Access is starting upon, which is sort of like a lot of metal, a lot of kind of like more niche genres, but also like a lot of other genres that are still experimental, but not necessarily metal or metal adjacent. Like in Oblivion Access, there was a lot of like weird experimental electronic music or some experimental hip hop or stuff like that.
That's exactly what Supersonic was like. They had like Venetian snares, and there was one where they had this like hard, like this weird, like super hard electronica act, but they got the vocalist from Bolt Thrower to turn up and just like shout over the mic for a bit, and he was having a great time. It's such a good festival, and I haven't been, like I said, since like 2009, I think was the last time I went. So I think I saw, so the High on Fire set was like 2008, and I think that was when Marnie Stern was there, and then the next year was Sun, and that was 2009, and then I haven't been since. But it's just an amazing 2 days, and it's in a venue, or it used to be in a venue called the Custard Factory, that is a repurposed Custard Factory that's now become this art space in a part of Birmingham.
Yeah, it'd be so cool to go. It's a good reason to organize a UK visit
trip every summer.
Yeah. Interestingly, I don't know if either of you guys listen to it, but do you ever check out Stuart McConey's Freak Zone on Sunday nights from 8 to 10?
No, because I'm usually in bed at that point.
From 8 p.m.?
Oh, mate, my son's bedtime routine starts at 7:30 every night.
Do y'all go to bed the same time he does normally?
Pretty much. It takes like an hour and a bit to get him to sleep.
So you don't just kind of like throw him in the room and he's all good?
No.
Shows what I know about parenting.
Other parents have that ability to just go, right, off you go to bed, and the kid goes, Nate, nah. Little man is like, no, I'm going to sit in bed with you, and you're going to read me 4 stories, and you're going to play instrumental lullabies on Alexa, and then I'll go to sleep. And then you've got to leave me in your room for a good 45 minutes, and then you can move me into my bed.
That's funny. Well, the good news is Stuart McConey's Freak Zone's on Six Music, and with the BBC Sounds app, you can basically listen to it whenever you want. Also, apparently BBC Sounds is now available outside the UK, so like folks in the States. Yeah, I guess they've gotten some licensing terms where they can basically like just in the app, just under these criteria, you can listen to UK radio shows. But basically, Stuart McConey does it every Sunday night, and it's usually like experimental, progressive, psychedelic, avant-garde, whatever. And like usually every night, he'll have like a featured album where he'll play like 4 or 5 tracks from that featured album, and there's the rest of it's just like really cool, weird shit. I've heard so much good stuff on there that I've discovered. It's kind of like walking into like your favorite indie record store that has like the staff with the most amazing knowledge, but it's like basically all stuff he came up with. Like one recent one, which actually I think was maybe at Supersonic this year, but I can't remember for sure, is Richard Dawson.
That name rings a bell. Did he do a split with Earth?
I wouldn't be surprised. He's basically like a really strange, like psychedelic folk singer. And he kind of like doesn't necessarily sing all that good, but he's just got such a bizarre, weird sound that it's like really compelling. Yeah, he grew up on hard rock music and like metal and stuff, and he tried to kind of like basically become a metal rocker, but somehow it kind of came out sounding like weird freak folk.
Yeah, it just seemed to say
And he did a podcast with the British comedian guy who's done some TV stuff that interviews people. He does song sketches during the interviews. Adam Buxton.
Oh, yeah. Adam Buxton's awesome.
Yeah, he did an interview with Adam Buxton. Awesome. I highly recommend you guys go listen to it. Really, really cool, but like super weird.
Okay, I'll give him a try. We did a collaboration with Circle, who are like a Finnish, I think they've done Supersonic. They're a weird Finnish, avant rock band.
Yeah, his new record, The Ruby Chord, is probably the one to start with. It's quite good, and it's very interesting on its own, even without like knowledge of his back catalog.
Cool. I'll give it a try.
Looks like Ricky's falling asleep.
No, I'm actually
talking about too obscure.
I'm going through next year's lineup for the Portals Festival. Have you ever heard of that, London?
Portals?
Yeah. Because you were talking about, was it Supersonic Festival, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there's a festival in London in, where is it?
Hackney. Oh, man, it's in Hackney.
Yeah. And it's alternative, kind of like, it's from the same organizers of, I forgot the name now. Well, at least one of the person.
Oh man, the headliners this year was one of them was Bosk.
Mm-hmm.
Is it like Baba Yaga's hut, maybe, or?
So there's a festival down south, like proggy stuff, like a prog rock festival.
Oh, I know.
And one of the guys who works there, he's one of the organizers of Portals. So Portals is more. It's more a bit on the alternative side.
Oh man, stuff. I'm looking at the lineup from this year.
Yeah.
Some great, Bosk 68, Mono.
Yep.
Who
is like Japanese noise rock, right?
Post rock, yeah.
Post rock, okay.
Who appear randomly on that new David Beckham documentary on Netflix. They get used in there a couple of times. Svalbard, Google, People Slicer. Yeah, it's not a bad lineup. Reminds me, I was wanting to go to Beyond the Redshift, which is in like 2 weeks, which is in London, which is a festival curated by the band Cult of Luna. They do it every year, but I couldn't take the day off. Or should I say my boss was taking the day off, so I couldn't get away with it.
Are they from London?
Cult of Luna are from Sweden, mate.
Sweden.
They're Swedish, but they always do the Redshift in the UK. The lineup is phenomenal. Yeah. It's them. Oh, they always headline, strangely enough. But like, it's them. What's it? Napalm Death. Emmerith Rundle's playing, and she's awesome. I think you guys might dig her.
Who are the Swiss ones? Is that the Ocean, right?
The Oceans, Swiss, German, they get English. They're just like collective,
that's
aren't
when,
they?
Yeah, that's when they do the Ocean, Oceans Collective, right?
Yeah.
The Ocean Collective, yeah.
So the lineup is amazing. Like Birds and Row are playing, who are an amazing hardcore band. I think they're French.
It's funny, I was looking through the past lineups of Portals while you guys were talking, and then 2019, there was a band called Telesun, but it's spelled differently than Telesun, the band. It's Tellison. But that was kind of funny.
Speaking of brands, right, that we follow and stuff.
Yes.
It's funny, like, to go full circle here. Indigo Fair is probably one of the most rock-oriented of all of them. More like rock, but with a soulful kind of like 70s feel to it.
Them and
I would say
them and maybe Eat Dust. Eat Dust have had because they're friends with, or it seems like they're mates with at least one of the guys from the band Amen Ra. They've got him to do some of their modeling.
Indigo Farah has made they've collaborated with Israel Nash in a couple of things, but Israel Nash is, I wouldn't say it's like full-blown rock, has a lot of like southern things going on, but But yeah, it's really, 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 really cool. Indigo Farrow has a bit more of a Western feel as well.
So Ironheart collaborated with Converge. On the side, they did. Wow. Yeah, so it was a weird one. So basically, it's the bassist of Converge, Nate Newton, who is also the new the current bassist for Cave In, and he's the front man of Doom Riders. He's a big Ironheart fan, or I don't know if it's just Ironheart or if he's a Raw Denim fan in general. And he got the lead singer of Converge, Jacob Bannon, into it. So like whenever they tour, he's generally wearing an Ironheart flannel on set, which is mad because he must be melting in that thing. Ironheart did a super black, like non-fade Type 3 jacket, and they released it, and the code for it was basically like a riff on Nate Newton's Instagram handle, which I think is Riff Blaster General or something like that. And it was they released it. I'll see if I can find a detail about it.
Isn't super black actually their denim that fades to gray rather than the one that stays black?
You might be right.
Names are swapped around or something.
It's a black that I remember seeing it in here we go. Yeah, Riff Blaster General. Yeah. So they did do, so yeah, Heddles did not, it's back in like 2017.
Yeah.
So it was the IH-101J black. They did.
Pretty much a Lee Rider jacket, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, so they made a non-fade black denim jacket, and that was because they threw a link with the leads from the bassist from Converge.
Was interesting, kind of going back to Telesun as well, like how everything they do kind of ties back to the Clash.
Yeah.
It was interesting because I met Pete when he was in London, probably like near 2013-ish, like soon after I moved here, and they used to do like a man market kind of thing, which is Pop Up Flea London or something like that. I forgot which. And he was here kind of showing Telesun stuff, and I ended up talking to him. He's like, oh, dude, next time you're in California, hit me up. So I mentioned previously living there in San Francisco. And I was like, okay, cool. I'm out there usually once a year. So anyways, I did hit him up. And like him and Tony basically offered for me to come kick it at their workshop for the day. And just kind of, you know, have a beer and chat. So I went up there, and sure enough, you know, like they're in their big giant warehouse. They've got their two big dogs. They had like huge dogs. I forgot what they were at this point, but sure enough, the whole time they're just playing like old school punk records kind of nonstop at the warehouse, like, you know, Clash and adjacent bands from like the late 70s and stuff and early 80s. And so I thought it was pretty cool how they kind of like truly do live that lifestyle kind of every day. So I have a lot of appreciation for Pete and Tony. Total diversion.
Yes.
Still maybe in the realm of rocks. I went and saw Puma Blue last week on Thursday at Coco. Super cool and definitely worth a listen if you guys haven't checked him out yet. It's more in the R&B blues kind of rocky space. Like imagine if like D'Angelo was recording in Rainbows by Radiohead. It's a super interesting guy. Like grew up in South London, somehow ended up in Atlanta. I think either met a partner there or family, something. I don't know, but he's kind of between the US and the UK. And he grew up listening to like a lot of you know, D'Angelo stuff, Jeff Buckley kind of style of vocals, which maybe wasn't inspired by Jeff Buckley. It might just be how he sings. And he quotes a lot, like in Rainbows, particularly from Radiohead in terms of like song structure and vocal structure. But amazing show. He played like a 2-hour set, which is crazy, just like nonstop for 2 hours. Really kind of heavy, bassy kind of hip hop beats, but all played with like a live drummer. really dope, like kind of like bass player and kind of keyboardist doing some like really cool melodies. And then a guy who does keys and plays saxophone as well. And then he's kind of like doing these sort of Jeff Buckley style crooning, you know. Most of the songs are either about insomnia, breakups, you know, like hardship in life, that kind of stuff. And a lot of his songs will kind of start quite mellow and chill and like build up to these like really big crescendos and sort of like very like loud soundscapes by the end of the song. But yeah, really freaking cool. And his newest record, Holy Waters, is awesome, awesome, awesome. His last record, which I think is maybe 2 years old now, called In Praise of Shadows, equally amazing. And yeah, if anyone's kind of keen to check him out and can't see him live, he's got this hour-long set he did on YouTube where he went to like a recording studio somewhere in London and recorded this like really dope live show, almost like as if he was like in the Roundhouse or something, but it's empty. I think that's definitely the best show I've seen this year, bar none.
Speaking of venues, David, how is Coco? I haven't been there since it reopened, and it used to be awesome, but now I'm guessing it's like, do they posh it up?
You know, I would, I mean, I don't know what your frame of, how long ago was it when you were last there?
Probably 2018.
No change then. Cause I saw Daniel Avery and I saw Local Natives both there like within a year or two pre-pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's really changed from how it was. I think it's exactly the same as it was then.
I saw All Them Witches there, and I was there at a party of sorts. Oh, a Halloween party. It was pretty cool, actually.
I'm so glad you said Halloween party. I was expecting that to go a very left field. There was,
yeah, when I said
everything
party
was
of
wiped
sorts.
Down. It was great.
Clear plastic on everything.
Yeah,
it's like a slip and slide.
No, I'm gonna go back there on sometime early November to watch Hermanos Gutierrez, which should be cool. Those guys, they played a small place in Hackney last year. I was really close to go see them, but I had tickets for Sepultura already, so I skipped that. And they just blew up in the past year, which was pretty cool to see. I've been following the guys for a while, and yeah, now they're on the agenda.
One thing that's really interesting to me about blowing up is like, it's crazy to see how much bands like The National have just become household names these days, or like Bon Iver. It's crazy that like,
yeah,
20 years ago we're like, oh, these bands are kind of neat and interesting and different. Now they're like selling out huge ass arenas multiple nights in a row. It's really interesting that they're kind of like the Neil Young and Crazy Horse or similar bands of notoriety for our time.
It's funny because whenever I hear and whenever I think about the success that bands like Bon Iver had, I always think of like, you know, how Red House Painters was doing that like 20 years prior. And if you ask most people, you know, who listen to so-called alternative music nowadays, you talk about Red House Painters, they're like, what? And Bon Iver is a household name. Those kind of things.
I mean, I'd agree and I disagree. Like, I'd agree in so much as like, so Mark Kozelek hasn't done himself any favors, right? Because he releases under his own name. He releases under Sunkill Moon. He releases under Red House Painters. So it's like, there's a bit of a continuity issue there where like it's never all under one name.
No, not necessarily, because Red House Painters, they stopped like 2001, maybe their last album. And then Mark dissolved the band, and then he restarted with Sun Gilmore. There were still a couple of players from Red House Painters, I think, in that band, but then, yeah, then he continued with Sun Gilmore.
I see.
But I'm just saying, like, you know, if there were to be For Emma long ago, in the early 90s, right? That would have been Red House Painters, you know what I mean? Like, but I'm not trying to compare. I'm just trying to position, you know, the names, the bands, and just looking at it from a distance now and seeing, oh man, it feels like Mark Kozlik, had he been, you know, had he released whatever Red House Painters album, then now, it would. In my opinion, it would probably be like revolutionary, you know. I just feel like at the time, the so-called alternative scene where he was inserted with bands like, I don't know, you know, Modest Mouse and Low and all those great bands, I just feel like, I don't know, it's just like, it feels like this whole career was just went, you know, by them, like, massively speaking, you know, like bands like The National or like Bon Iver and stuff like that. I feel like they continued like to with a bigger scale.
Well, yeah, so it's a couple interesting things. I'm kind of just like looking up some dates while we're talking, right? So for example, when you're talking about kind of Red House Painters kind of preceding this kind of like soulful indie folk stuff, I was like, oh, well, what about like someone like Joseph Arthur? Yeah. But then interestingly, kind of timeline wise, so like Joseph Arthur, he kind of had his moment on the OC when they played one of his songs, Honey in the Moon. Mm-hmm. And like, he kind of had a bit of a spotlight.
Oh yeah.
But that
Red
was
House
like,
Spencer's also had it in Vanilla Sky. Yeah. There's no question that Red House Painters have their place, you know, in history, and they had a certain amount of success, but nothing compared to what Bon Iver is. Do you know what I mean? Like, there, Mark Kozlik or any of his projects, neither of his projects would be filling out arenas. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, just to kind of complete a point. But what was interesting was when I was actually looking at the time frames, it's like Bon Iver late 2000s, Joseph Arthur, just to pick something random, early 2000s, mm-hmm. But then when I go to Red House Painters, you're right, that's like early 90s. Oh. And it's like, well, what was happening in the early 90s? And I guess contemporaries would have been stuff like, and not even contemporaries, but like, you know, Yo La Tengo or early Dinosaur Jr. or mm-hmm. a very different type of music. Yeah. And so actually, yeah, you're right. I can't really think of much. And I was like, well, maybe someone like, you know, Songs Ohio, but even they're not that old. So yeah, it's interesting that like that kind of indie folk,
yeah,
kind of sad singer songwriter stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't really think of much. I mean, maybe Smog, even that's probably too recent. That, yeah, no one was really doing that back then. That's kind of interesting, actually. Yeah, even Smog or Bill Callahan, he's late 90s when he got started.
Oh yeah, like or if you think of Will Oldman and Palace, you know?
Yeah.
But all those guys, had they, you know, if they were in their 20s now or early 30s now, right? Instead of their late 50s. So I don't know. I just feel like, you know, different times and the access that people have to music nowadays is just so different.
I do think it is primarily the access, you know, it's the fact that you had Pitchfork and they were kind of like writing about these bands and like someone would get a Best New Music on Pitchfork and like the whole world would go apeshit. Cause like, I mean, Bon Iver did do some stuff that was uniquely interesting in that, you know, he had a good marketing story around this idea of like, I'm going to go in a cabin, write a record about a breakup, and then I've got this great story to sell it. But also that his kind of like high-pitched soul singing kind of style, Marvin Gaye kind of singing, that was very unique. And so that was like a USP that helped him probably sell more. But if he didn't have that marketing story of like, I'm going in a cabin to make this record, it probably wouldn't have sold as well. And then like with the National, I think their thing was just like really, really, really good songwriting. And really good execution, such that like just the quality was so high that they were almost like inevitably going to be successful because they just never put out a shit record until a couple years ago.
I'm not so familiar with their discography, but
oh man, I know it backwards and forward. I'm Easy to Find, 2019. That was a horrible record, but the rest of it was good. Yeah. Anyways, we lost Andy, I think.
Sorry, that totally outside of my wheelhouse.
Well, interesting. There's some crossovers. So like Sun Kil Moon, who Ricky is talking about, has done some stuff with Jesu.
Oh yeah.
Which is kind of more in the doomy.
Yeah, Jesu Broderick.
Yeah, they've done some collaborative stuff. So there's a bit of crossover here from like the heavier stuff to the 100%. To the acoustic-y stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe one for Andy. Interestingly, I saw Val perform when I was in Austin for Oblivion Access Fest, and I have to be honest, I couldn't quite get into it.
But, love that.
But I mean,
I love that.
I liked
you might
it,
like
but I don't.
Collaborations with Emmerith Rundle then.
That's what I was going towards, the acoustic stuff they did. Or actually, maybe I'm talking about something different.
But they definitely did. They did some collaborations with Emmerith Rundle, and she has an absolutely wonderful voice.
Because they've done some really cool acoustic tracks that are basically like, literally them singing acoustic with a woman doing vocals.
That's probably Emmerith Rundle.
And it's like it's very much not metally, even though it's like from a metal band, and like that stuff I really, really dug. I'll see if I can find it.
What was the name again, David?
Hunting Thou, THOU, but it's
they put out, so they are constantly releasing stuff. I'm trying to remember. I'm sure I've seen them. I was probably very drunk when I saw them. I think they might have been at Hellfest, which is when I saw Yob, back when they were angry.
I think I saw Yob. Oh wait, did I see them or? They definitely performed this summer at that festival. I'm not sure if I saw them.
That's such a good band. I saw them opening for Eurosis and then Godflesh in the middle. And Yob were probably the best. I went there just for Neurosis, and Yob was so good live.
Oh, this is weird. This seems to be on their own records that are just Thou records, like a one called Inconsolable. But they're like acoustic-y, non-metal-y songs.
Yeah, they should do what they want.
Yeah.
Thou, I think, of that kind of band. They put tons out. They do splits. Like they did a split with The Body.
The Body. That, what crazy-ass vocals.
There's just that kind of... I totally forgot. I saw The Body live once. I saw them... Were they opening for Arabrot? Arab Lord? Or was it Arab Lord that were opening for them? It was a weird gig. That's a good band. You might like them. Arab Lord.
How do you spell that?
I'd probably pronounce it wrong. I think it might even be Arab Lord.
Get your Norwegian right.
They,
or Swedish.
It is. If you just type in that on Google, it will actually give you the correct spelling.
Arab
Lord.
Yeah, but it's got accents on it. They put a thing on their Instagram once of how to pronounce the name. They're good. They're really good. I've got
Vagina Dentata. That means like vagina with teeth. Interesting.
Yeah. They did some. They started off as a hardcore band.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so I think I've got their. I think it's called Revenge. Is their hardcore album? And then they just kind of go more and more into like the proper like crazy noise rock. And then they bring in like a Southern Gothic elements, because they even made an album called Norwegian Gothic.
Southern Gothic. Yeah.
Gothic. That's cool. I'm excited by this.
It went from being a hardcore band to basically a husband and wife duo.
Okay.
They played Damnation once when I was there. But I went, I was really looking forward to seeing them live, and I just got there and I just wasn't in the right headspace for them. So I watched like two tracks and then I had to walk away. But they're really good.
Well, I've said it before, but I'll say it again. In the realm of noise rock and hardcore and metal stuff, I cannot say enough positive things about Uniform. They are so freaking awesome. I love Uniform, and I cannot wait till they come play London again, because I still want to see them.
I don't know them, but I like the name of the band.
I think you've played
Have you guys seen the newest season of Twin Peaks, like the modern Twin Peaks season?
Yes.
So do you know that scene where bad version of Detective whatever his name is driving in the car, and there's this kind of like crazy ass noise rock playing with someone's like, wah, 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 like screaming at the top of their lungs.
It's been a few years since
okay. Well, anyways, that was Uniform. And they did a record with The Body, which is pretty crazy. But
I remember you talking about that.
Yeah, I would still recommend personally. Well, actually, we're nearing the hour marks. Maybe we should wrap up with some recommendations. Maybe like two records each where we recommend. But maybe I'll start by saying "Wake in Fright" by the album. By the Uniform. That's my favorite record of theirs because it kind of gets a little bit synthy, but it's still like incredibly noisy. So I'd maybe recommend that. And for a second record, I would maybe recommend trying to scan through what I've been listening to recently that's been interesting. The new Slow Dive record's cool. It's like kind of classic shoegaze brought back into the modern day and still just as good as it always was. And then that's two recommendations for me.
I'll recommend the two that that I was talking about earlier, because that's literally what I've been listening to this week. So yeah, it's 68's new release, and it's called Yes and No. Yes, it's called Yes and. And I'm gonna let David pronounce the other one. Is that all right?
Hyacinth.
Yeah. Hyacinth. I didn't want to butcher it.
Jacinto.
Thing is, whenever I hear Hyacinth, all I can think of is the TV show Keeping Up Appearances, which will fall flat on you two guys. Early 90s British sitcom about a housewife called Hyacinth Bucket, which she pronounces Hyacinth Bouquet because she's always about trying to put on the airs and graces.
Do you know when you write a word for the first time, you get that weird feeling where you're like, I don't know how to spell this properly. I've said this word like thousands of times and I don't know how to spell it.
Yeah,
first time you're like writing it for some weird reason.
It's so go on.
When you guys say Hyacinth, right? I'm like, I've heard that before, but I've never seen it written. Do you know? Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of like going through this weird thing, which I'm looking at the word, and I for some reason, like I don't know if it's dyslexia or whatever, but I just can't grasp the word.
But I bet you money that's a word of French origin.
That probably. It's just, based I don't know. Spelling. I'm just looking at the word. Maybe it's, I'm pretty sure I'm being brainwashed by what David Gene Edwards' past references are, you know, like the whole pasture, the whole religious life that he's gone through. So, for some reason, I don't know. I mean, you could go through the list, the song list, and there's, you know, Apparition. There's always some references that you might think that can be, you know, on the religious side. But yeah, go listen to those for sure, because the killer records.
Andy, final recommendations?
Okay, right. I'm going to be cheeky because I'm going to give you three, because two of them are 5-minute EPs. So first off, I'm going to go, and this is literally something I just started listening to again. This album's from years and years ago. Gin by the black metal band Cobalt, who are amazing. They've got they have a southern gothic element to their kind of sound. And Gin in particular is probably is their best record. It's fucking phenomenal. So I highly recommend that. And then the other two I'm going to say is the one I mentioned earlier, Unpleasant Living by End It, which I popped up in our chat, and a video for one of the songs, Hate Keeper. And then the other one is Eye Teeth. So Eye Teeth are a band, strange enough. They've got a full album called Straight Edge Violence. But yeah, I've got their demo. I will see if I can find it on there. No, that's not what I wanted. They are one of the angriest bands I've ever heard. The lead singer is Nate, who is from Rotten Hell, which is a holy terror band similar to Integrity. And he was also in the early 2000s UK hardcore band or metalcore band Kanon, whose t-shirt I'm wearing right now. He's so angry, so good. It's fast, it rips. There's not a bad track in the entire EP. I mean, admittedly, it's four songs. Turns out they don't have I just swear they had a band camp. Anyway, they're a mega. So I'll just put a link to their new album instead, which should be mega as well. And will probably last about 10 minutes, knowing those lads.
Cool. So, awesome. Yeah. So we had a good chat about some music today, some rock music. Had a fun bit of banter and kept the recording to almost an hour. So thanks everybody for listening. Please subscribe to us wherever you enjoy our content, YouTube, Spotify, Apple, Google, or Stitcher. Check us out on Instagram. Hit us up if you have any questions. Give us feedback on this new Loose Threads format. And hope to see you all at our next podcast episode.
Yeah.